Session number 32137, reel 4.
We all got out, and there were 11 of us, and we all got out and went over the wall, and we decided, because we didn't really know the area, that we would go down to where they had taken us swimming. In other words, the river, I think it was Sangro, actually, because we knew where that was and how to get there, and that's what we did, all 11 of us. And eventually we finished up in a wood somewhere and stayed the night there. It was raining, so God, it was awful. Anyway, having done that, we decided that 11 people wandering around together was too many, and we split up into three groups, two of four, one of three. That was 11. And well, then we split up, and the four of us and our group decided what we wanted to do. We didn't know where the British troops were, or how far up they were, or when they would be coming up. So we thought at first that we would try and stay in an area, because I must say the Italian peasants were brilliant, really. They gave us food, and so for a couple of days we stayed in a wood, really. And the first Italians that we saw were, I think they were woodcutters, anyway, because they came in and to chop wood and that, and they were the first one. We very gingerly made contact with them, and they were extremely friendly. And that's, so we decided to stay there for a couple of days. Luckily, the weather got better, we had sunshine.
It was September, wasn't it?
That's right. Yes. Well, more the beginning of October.
Oh, so it was getting towards autumn.
That's right. I don't know, we made somebody contacted us and said there were some SAS men who had landed in Italy, the idea being to collect these prisoners who were wandering around the countryside and get them off by submarine. We got this information, and one of the Italian farmers, very nice chap, he said he would take us to where this SAS man or the SAS men were supposed to be, and that was a place called Trigno, T-R-I-G-N-O, Trigno, which was on the coast, and that was where we were supposed to assemble to be taken off.
So all the time were you foraging for food yourself, or were the Italians supplying you with a bit of food, something to
eat? they supplied us with food, very good, I must say it was awful at one time, because we had a little bird each, they kill the birds that fly over, awful. I mean, it was all right, but it was rather nice.
Yeah, so
anyway,
forced to, yeah. Want to, really.
Yeah, anyway, it was quite a trek to get to Trigno, because and we went across country all the time, because that was the Italians always say sempre campagna, always on the countryside, that way, sempre campagna, keep off the roads. In other words, there's so many Germans about, and there were so hell of a lot of Germans about. But that venture didn't work out. I don't know what happened, but
you got to the actual beach area, did you?
That's right. And there were about 50 of us there, a lot of them from the camp, not from our tunnel, but from one of the other tunnels. We were all so full of the joy, actually had cups of tea and waited for the so-called submarine. But and we all lined up along the coast, and the SAS man, he's a major actually, I think, he was signalling with a light, signalling out, presumably to try and contact the submarine. I don't know how. Anyway, what happened was he signalled, on a German R-boat, a motorboat, motor torpedo boat actually, came in, and although at first we didn't know what it was actually, but it opened fire, with a gun actually, so we thought, well, God, that can't be a submarine.
So where were you when it opened fire? Were you just on the beach waiting?
Well, it was not actually on the beach. We were slightly up, you know, it was on a, on the bank, really, up a bit higher on the beach.
So
anyway,
no one got hurt in that incident.
As far as I know, not. We, you know, but the point was, it wasn't very friendly. So then we then decided that, that it wasn't on, and we dispersed and all went our own way, you know. We still kept an our group of four, but
so you
we decided to go south.
So you gave up on the idea of the submarine rescue because you thought it wasn't going to happen?
No.
And your aim was, what was your aim in going down south?
Well, our aim then was to try and make contact with our troops who were coming up. And
did you have any idea how the fight was going, where the British had got to? Did you have any...
Not really, no. We had... I mean, the only thing we could tell that that it was progressing well was that aircraft. We saw British and American aircraft overhead, and quite low-flying sometimes, and we thought, well, they must be somewhere near, because otherwise they wouldn't be so many of them and flying so low. But how near, I don't know.
So you left the beach, and what was it like after that, going south?
Well, it was a very slow progress actually, and we kept getting information about people who seemed to know what was going on, and well, we met them, and nothing really happened. In the end, we decided that the four of us was too many, because the Germans were much more... There were many more of them as farther south we got, actually. And we decided to go individually. Well, we did that. As a matter of fact, during the course of this, you know, we stayed in various places, helped the farmers pick their grapes and all that sort of thing, because that was the season. It was a great picking season. And that was the first time I ever saw grapes being trampled by feet to get the juice out of them. All the girls did that. They didn't have any men in there, but there were girls. I hope their feet were clean. I don't know where they were. Occasionally we slept in a barn or something like that. Mostly, though, it was outside. I'm amazed how fit I was, you know, considering the circumstances. You know, I thought I'd be getting malaria. I was bitten by mosquitoes. You said that whenever we're near water, my face and my friend's face were covered in bites from these damn mosquitoes. And if they got on your eye, there was a huge lump coming out. Of the 11, I'm just going ahead of me, 10 escaped and one chap was recaptured.
So it's pretty successful.
Right? Yeah, it was really.
And how about, you talked about Germans, what were the Germans doing in this time? I mean, when you saw them, what was going on?
Well, most of the Germans were in these sort of motorcycle and sidecar patrolling the road, you know. And one place I suddenly came across a lot of wires going all over the ground. I thought, my God, what's all this? And it happened to be a German gun emplacement. There were guns up on the top, and all these little connecting wires, you know, communication wires and everything else. And suddenly came into it, and I thought, oh, my God, better get out of this quickly. And we were... I was with one other man then. I don't know. I think it was a corporal from one of the other camps, and he decided to come with me because I wanted to get through, whereas the others wanted to stay for a while. And we were shot at. The man, the German, said he was shouting something, you know, and he was a long way away. I mean, he just shot, but it wasn't anywhere near us. So we then disappeared and went in a different route. By that time, by the way, I'd got civilian suit, because we'd contacted the Italian well, they called themselves partisans. They were a lot of rogues, really. But they did get me this so I wasn't sort of in any kind of uniform at all. It was absolutely disgusting, this suit. But anyway.
Why was it disgusting?
Well, it smelt so, I don't know. It was somebody else's, you see. And, and of course, I had to sleep in it. And, well, you know, I had it on all the time. I was so glad to get rid of it in the end. But it did help because it meant that we could at least walk without bringing any serious attention towards us. Now, the Germans were... Well, these were gunners, actually, that I'm talking about. And on the river, I think it was called the... what was it called? It doesn't matter what it was called. Anyway, the river that I crossed in order to get to the British troops who were on the other side, a bit farther away, all along that river there were these German... I'm sure they were probably these motorcycles and sidecars, but they had a gun and it was firing tracer bullets, firing across at intervals along here, you know, just to show that they were there. But, you know, when I sort of worked it out, I thought, well, if we go in between these, we won't get hurt. And that's what I did, actually. I had one list corporal. He decided he wanted to come with me. And we went across this river, which was only about thigh deep, took our boots off and waded across, really, to the other side. And then we sort of put our boots on again and managed to get to a farm. Well, it was a haystack, really. We decided, this was at night, by the way, that the best thing was we would lie up in this haystack. It was raining too. Lie up in this haystack and see where we were in the morning. And that's exactly what we did. We sort of dug into the hay and sort of got inside it. And the next morning, the farmhouse was not very far away. And so we went there, and again, very friendly, because, you know, we kept on saying we were Bisogna di guerra and inglese or what have you. And I said, you know, I had a sort of smattering of Italian then, asked him whether he knew where the British troops were. And he said, yes, they're in that village over there, which was actually not more than about a mile away, high up. And he said, I'll take you there, but have some food first. And he went out, got a chicken and killed it, plucked it and cooked it all in one go, sort of thing. And, well, it was all right, tasted all right. I mean, we were hungry anyway. But that's what he did. That just shows how helpful they were.
So can you describe, please, then, the time when you had the first contact with the British troops after all that time?
The first person I met was a sergeant. He must have been in the Royal Artillery. And I explained to him who I was and who the other chap was with me. And I said, I'd like to go and see your OC. Could you tell me where he is? He said, yes, well, he's up. Go up there and you'll find that our offices are up on the high part of the thing. And I went up there and I contacted him. He was a gunner major in charge of that particular group of gunners. And I explained to him, I had to give him my army number and everything else. I don't know whether he did anything with it, but...
this was to prove that you were a British officer.
Yes, I had to prove it, yeah. And anyway, he was very good because he then... He managed to get a uniform. I don't know, they must have been there for some time, so they had the quartermaster stores there. So he gave us both a battle dress, actually, and I managed to get rid of those filthy clothes, and so did the corporal chap.
Did you get the impression that a lot of prisoners of war were turning up in these British encampments?
I wouldn't say a lot, but quite a few were turning up. And what happened... I don't know whether I told you this already, but when we were transported from North Africa, we went to a camp in a place called Bari, and that was a sort of camp where they took everything away from you that could have been useful. They gave you a wash, and then I was transferred to Katie. Well, what happened, as I went farther and farther down, finished up in the same camp where I'd been captured by the Italian, and we were told to stay put. You see, they didn't want us wandering, and they wanted us to stay there so that they could sort out, you know, some transport and get us back to, well, and back to England, really.
Were there a lot of you in that camp in Bari?
Well, not a huge number, but quite a few, yeah.
What did you feel when you were finally amongst the Brits again? Because you were free, essentially, first time in well over a year.
Yeah, well, I was quite elated to know that at least I'd achieved what I intended to. And it was a marvellous feeling, really. But, I just went through the normal army routine after that.
Had you been really scared during that journey down? I mean, was it a relief from that point of view as well, that you finally felt your life was not in danger anymore? Or had it been more like an adventure, really?
Well, it was more like an adventure. It was so marvellous to be out and to be free to do what you wanted to do and not to be confined, you know, and overlooked by guards and people. It really was a marvellous feeling of freedom.
So the sense of freedom had come really once you'd come out of the camp.
It had, really.
When you were back amongst your own countrymen.
No, it had come once we got out of the camp. You know, you felt, my gosh, we can do what we like now. We can go there or go here, and et cetera, et cetera. It really was a lovely feeling.
Was it hard to sort of readjust to being in Britain after being a prisoner of war?
No, not really. When I got back, I suppose that I looked sunburnt or something. Everybody looked, and I had one medal for, you know, and they thought, oh God, he's been doing that. Anyway, everybody was very kind. Now, I remember when I first came back, and landed at Liverpool, and I had to go somewhere on the tram, and the girl came round and said, oh no, you don't have to pay, you know, that sort of attitude. I was issued with thousands of clothing coupons. Now, they were very difficult to come by, so all my friends, I was more than a friend to them if I gave them a few coupons, so that they could go. The mother of one of my ex-girlfriends, she said, oh, I'd love some of those, I want to get some curtains or something, you know, that sort of thing.
Just wondering, you were treated a little bit like a hero when you came back in a way by individuals. But
yeah, I suppose so, you know,
like,
yeah, well, I didn't feel like a hero, no, but I suppose people, well, they were fascinated by seeing somebody who'd been a prisoner of war, you know, it's and they wanted to know, you know, how I got on and what it was like in prison camp, that sort of thing.
And I suppose, in a way, your wave were the luckier ones, because it was only at the end of the war that the people from Germany and the people from the Far East came back.
That's right.
So you hadn't had, relatively speaking, such a traumatic time.
No,
and
that's
so
true.
So when they met you, they would have thought, oh, well, that wasn't too bad an
experience. No, that's true. I mean, particularly as you mentioned, the Far East, the Japanese, when they came back, they really had some awful stories to tell, didn't they?
To yours. So you went back, and it sounds like you adjusted quite well to your family and everything.
Yeah. I mean, obviously my family were absolutely over the moon seeing me back again. And a lot of my friends, you know, friends, as a matter of fact, several of them who had written to me in prison camp, I managed to see them. I also went, I saw several of the fellow prisoners. They had given me addresses and things to go and, you know, just to go and see them and tell them how they were and that sort of thing. And I went to several of those. That was interesting too.
Because Because presumably these were people who may not have any information about what had happened.
Well, that's true. Well, they may have known that the town had capitulated, but they didn't know what had happened to all the prisoners that were there. And there was also lots of things in the Daily Telegraph, people asking, you know, whether so-and-so knew. And one of them I knew, actually, and I went to see them. They were so pleased.
So they were advertising in the newspaper for information about
that's
ISIS.
Right, yeah. They were so pleased that... Because I said, well, he in fact had escaped, and I had met him at that abortive attempt to go away by submarine. And so I knew he was all right.
So 1944, I'm working out that it was the beginning of the summer... You went up to Ripon,
yeah, that's the School of Military Engineering.
So, so after coming back and having your 3 months R&R, basically, after being a captive, what did you do when you went up to Ripon?
Well, it was mainly Bailey Bridge work, you know, learning about it, because there are quite a lot of facilities up there, and...
And the Bailey Bridge, how revolutionary was that for you?
Oh, completely, because all we had, I was trained with what they call a small box girder, which was quite a light thing. It was in sections and you cantilevered it across an opening. Or the large box girder, which was rather bigger, you know, and you had to put it together before it could, and then launch it. Or... I suppose we still use those. There were pontoon bridges as well, but the Bailey was so adaptable. The Bailey, you could build it up from taking quite light weights to taking very heavy weights by increasing the number of panels or thickening the sides, or all with these paddles, which were handleable by about six men usually, and they were kept together by a very high tensile pin that went in, you know, joined the panels together. When I'd done my stint there, I was subsequently posted to a field park company. And the field park company had all the mechanical equipment. They provided it. You asked for it and they brought it up, you know, all the bulldozers and anything like that was provided by the field park company.
Can you tell me a bit about what it was like when you first got to France? You got there a month after D-Day.
Yeah.
What was it like? You mentioned it was.
Well, I got over at Aramonche, you know, where they'd got the temporary harbour and Pluto, the thing that came under all the stuff in there. And then I was posted to a place called Ouistreham, which is also near Caen.
Were there still German units around by that stage when you were there, or had they retreated?
Well, the German units were around because they were holding up the advance altogether. They were just sort of south of Caen, I suppose it was. But when the breakthrough came, it was called the Falaise Gap. I don't know whether you've heard of that, but that's where we got through. And that really was absolutely incredible because we went through quite quickly after the Germans had after they'd retreated, and on the roadside, all their vehicles and tanks that had been knocked out either by aircraft or in the advance itself, the whole of the road, and that was quite amazing too, because we went through the whole of the World War One battlefield in about 2 hours, the whole lot. All the names of the world, places, you know, Ypres, Wipers, and all the Somme, all those places. But it struck me as being a bit incredible that in the First World War they'd been 4 years mucking about there.
So you moved pretty quickly through France, and then you mentioned Ypres, so into Belgium.
I finished up that move went very swimmingly, and of course the Germans had an opportunity to reorganise themselves and make some sort of stand. Well, we got as far as Hasselt in Belgium, and we were there for some time actually, and then the operation Market Garden that was had was being organised while we were there, and we then well, you know, when it happened, which was late September, I think it was, we moved on to Eindhoven in Holland, and we were there, you know, probably for 2 days, I think, just camped in all the side streets of the whole of Eindhoven was filled with vehicles, and the Dutch people were you know, they're overjoyed at being relieved, and they clamoured all over the vehicles and brought out souvenirs and everything, you know. It really was lovely. But we were there, and we were part of the garden part. Market part was the proper parachute dropping and everything else, and garden part was the road one, you know, where we had to go up this road. The idea was we'd go up so quickly, but we didn't, but so quickly to relieve the people in Arnhem.
So when you got to Eindhoven and the forces were building up, did you know as an individual what the plan was going to be for that operation?
Yes, well, we, all the officers, I don't know about all the men, but all the officers had to report to have a talk about what was going to happen. And that was very good. I must say that was marvellous for Montgomery. He let people know what was happening, because quite often you hadn't a clue what was going on. You just went on and did what you could and waited for the next order sort of thing. But we did know that was the Market Garden was a really major wartime operation.
So what happened then? You thought you were going to storm up and support the Paris, presumably,
yeah, well,
and then eventually cross the river.
That was the idea.
What happened?
It was quite not such a fast progress as they anticipated, but we did go on, and quite a lot of the American parachute, both of them, captured their objectives. But the British paratroopers, of course, were in Arnhem. And that was where we were going round, you know, to cut off the Germans from the top.
So at that time, that's when you saw Montgomery.
Yeah.
Can you describe that, please?
We were doing some repairs on the bridge at Grave, I think it was, and he came by in his vehicle, open, standing up, but he ignored me. I saluted, of course. Ignored me completely and gave my sergeant a big packet of cigarettes for the lads.
And what was your impression?
Well, the impression was that he obviously was an officer who wanted to be loved by the men, really, because, you know, he was like, well, and that's what you need, really. You have to have all the men behind you.
So you were there, waiting, and then you didn't move as fast as you expected.
No, it took.
So what was it like?
Operation Market Garden started, I think it was on about the 15th of September. Well, we were in Nijmegen just at the end of September. So it wasn't all that long from Eindhoven to Nijmegen, right across this. It was the main road we were on all the time, actually. And the Germans were attacking from the side, you see. That was the problem, and held us up in several places, actually.
Did you ever come under attack there?
The first time we came under, my unit and I came under attack, was in Nijmegen, and they were shelling us from the Reichswald forest just over the border, actually. That was a bit grim. I lost a few of my men there.
Really?
From shelling. Well, the civilians were obviously being shelled as well.